Okay, we made it this far. Yom Kippur is just slightly behind us. And the next window of opportunity is Sukkos. The Pasuk says about Sukkos, Dafka about Sukkos, V'samachta bechagecha. You should be happy on your holiday. So I thought, since that's the explicit mitzvah in the Torah for Sukkos, that you should be happy, so maybe we will speak practically about how to do that. We'll start with six questions about Simcha, and hopefully within the next hour or so, we'll be able to actually focus in on practically what we've got to do in order to be ready for Sukkos. Okay. Point number one. There's a pasuk in Dvarim, Deuteronomy, Kaf Ches Tezvav, 28:15, which reads as follows. V'hayayim lo tishma b'kol Hashem. God warns that if we don't listen to His voice, lishmor lasot et kol mitzvosav, to guard and to do all of His mitzvahs, v'chukosav, and His statutes, Asher Anochi Metzavcha Hayom, that I'm commanding you today, then Ubau Alecha Kol HaKlalos Ha'Ela V'Sigucha, then all of the curses that then follow in the verses will hit us, will be hit with these terrible curses. So according to the first verse that I'm quoting to you, Kaf Ches Tezvav, in Deuteronomy 28:15, it seems like the reason that the Jews suffer in history, the reason they get hit with the tochacha, the reason that they have holocausts, essentially, is because they don't keep mitzvahs. Now, if you just skip ahead in that same section of the Torah, if you'll skip down to chapter 28, verse 46 and 47, there the verse says, this is at the end, after having listed off all of the literally Holocaust-esque things that will happen to us. The verse says, "Vayubecha laot." The Jews will be a sign, ulumofes, it will be a wonder among the nations. The nations will look at them. How could such horrible things happen to a nation? Ubzaracha, and to their seed, ad olam, generation after generation. How could the Jews suffer so terribly every generation? Just when they think the last Holocaust has come, the next one is around the corner. And the pasuk says, why does this happen? Tachas asher lo avarta es Hashem Elokecha b'simcha b'tuv levav merov kol. Because the Jews did not serve Hashem with simcha, with happiness, u'b'tuv levav, and with a good heart, merov kol, when they had a lot. So you see there's a clear contradiction between the verses that immediately precede the description of the Holocaust and the verses that describe the Holocaust just after it's happened. The verses that immediately precede say, the reason this is going to happen to you is because you're not going to keep mitzvahs. But according to the verse at the end, it says, no, the reason that it happened to you is not because you didn't keep mitzvahs. The reason it happened is because you weren't happy for while you were keeping mitzvahs. So which is it? Is that we get hit because we don't keep mitzvahs, or we get hit because we're not happy? Question number two. There's a verse in Tehillim, Beis Yod Aleph. The second parak of Tehillim, verse 11, which says, Ivdu es Hashem b'yira. When you serve Hashem, you should serve Him b'yira, with awe, v'gilu birada, and rejoice with trembling. Now, this is a weird verse. First, how can it say serve Him with awe and rejoice? Like, how do those two things go together? Unless it's talking about two completely different times in your life. But then why put them in one verse? It's as if it's one instruction. Serve Him with awe and rejoice. And more, it says rejoice. In case you think it's two different times in your life, it says rejoice with trembling. So you see, it's the exact same moment. Why rejoicing? It's rejoicing with trembling. So how do we resolve the contradiction between tremendous yira, to the point of trembling, and simcha? It says, if they go together, but in our minds, they certainly don't go together. Number one, what was the cause? What is the cause of Jewish Holocaust? Is it lack of observance or lack of simcha? Number two, how do you resolve the contradiction between awe and simcha and happiness? Number three, a bomb question. What causes simcha? What makes people happy? I could charge $25,000 just for the answer to that question, yeah? You're going to get it for free. Okay. Number four, what is the definition of simcha? Obviously, you realize that if you're going to pursue a particular quality or product, it would be helpful to have a definition of that quality or product in advance that you know when you got it. So what exactly is simcha? We know what it feels like, but if you had to describe it in great detail, what is it? Number one, what causes Holocausts? Is it lack of observance or lack of happiness? Number two, how do we resolve the contradiction between yira and simcha, between happiness and awe? Three, what causes simcha? Four, what's the definition of simcha? Five, according to the later verses, which say that the reason the Jews get hit with the Holocaust is because they weren't happy enough, so you got to ask yourself, why such a horrific punishment for such a light sin? You know, like, okay, if I proclaim in front of a million non-Jews that there's no God, I understand why terrible things might happen to me. But because I wasn't happy enough, I get Auschwitz? How does that fit? Why such a serious punishment for such a light sin? And number six, that latter verse that said that the punishment is because of lack of simcha, it says, Takas asher lo avata es Hashem b'simcha, because we didn't serve Hashem b'simcha, ubetuv levav, with happiness, with a good heart. And the verse adds on, Merov kol, when we had a lot of wealth. Why does the verse think that it's so important that we didn't serve him with happiness when we had a lot of wealth? But if you don't serve him with a lot of happiness when you don't have so much wealth, then it's okay? Why does it add when you have a lot of wealth? Okay. So we'll begin the answer now. I want to start by describing lack of simcha as a symptom. Soon we'll describe lack of symptom also as a cause, but I want to start by describing lack of simcha as a symptom of something else. There's a very famous Taisvis in Tractate Chagiga, page 15a. Dibur Maskil, Shuvu Banim Shovavim. This medieval commentator, the grandsons of Rashi, the Balei Taisvis, there tell the story of Elisha ben Abuya's bris. Elisha ben Abuya was a boy who grew to become one of the Gedolei HaDor, ended up becoming one of the greatest rabbis of the generation. Exactly parallel today to any of our Gedolim. And then, at the end of his life, he went off the derech and became the modern equivalent of a reform homosexual, right, anti-Orthodox rabbi. Yes? That's essentially what happened, yeah? L'Havdil of Havdalas. He went off the derech big time. So, the Taisvis here is trying to describe exactly where the seeds were planted when he was young, for him going off the derech, and it tells this whole story about his bris, and how at his bris already things were not going right. And the Gemara there tells, the Taisus there tells the following story, that at his bris, his father, Abuya, invited all of the most important rabbis in town to come to to the bris. And it's hinted that he invited them because he wanted to honor. And when the most important rabbis are present, that gives you a lot of honor, that the most important rabbis are present for your son's bris. Anyway, that's a side point. That's actually the main point of the Tosfos, but it's a side point for our purposes. What we're really interested in is an interesting tangent to the Tosfos. The Tosfos mentions that two very, very important rabbis were there, and these two rabbis, Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua, they weren't very interested in taking part in the smorgasbord. So while everyone else was standing around and filling their plates with hot dogs and stuff like that, so Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua said, you know, listen, while they're doing their thing, let's do our thing. And they went over into a corner of the Hilton, and they pulled up a couple of chairs, and they started learning. You know, like, let's have fun. And this is what was fun for them. They liked to learn. So they started to learn, and as they started to learn, so they got so much pleasure from the learning of Chumash. They were in such glee from the learning of Chumash, yeah, that fire started to descend from heaven around them. And they finished Chumash. They went right to the Mishnah, right? They're learning in the middle of the Mishnah, right? As they're learning the Mishnah, the fire is descending lower and lower and lower. By the time these guys had finished the Mishnah, this is a few minutes later, right, and gotten to the Gemara, right, they're now like flying through the Babylonian Talmud. So the fire is dancing around on the carpet next to them, yes? And there's smoke going up, yes? And Abuya, the host, right, smells something burning, runs into this corner of the Hilton, right, sees the hotel's on fire, runs in with the fire extinguisher, and sees that it's caused by Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yeshua sitting there and learning. And he says, what are you trying to do? You want to burn the place down? And they say, no. It's just that we had such simcha from our learning that it caused the fire. Yeah, we're very sorry. Yeah, okay. End of Tosfos. Okay. Now, what do you see? That Torah, when learned properly, brings so much simcha that fire descends from heaven. Okay, now exactly what does it mean fire descends from heaven, I don't know. But these guys are pretty happy. Yeah, they're pretty happy. So point number one is that simcha is a sign that someone is learning properly, that their relationship to Torah is appropriate. Two, and here I'm going to describe for a moment simcha not just as a symptom. Oh, sorry, no, again, I'm going to continue to describe simcha as a symptom. The Sefer Ikarim, in the standard printing of the Ikarim, page 269, offers the following interesting metaphor. He says that when a person is ill, and as a result of their illness, one of their limbs becomes paralyzed, and they lose feeling in that limb. So when the doctor comes to give him therapy for this paralyzed, numb limb, he keeps checking on the progress of the therapy by pricking the limb with a pin. As long as the person does not feel the prick, then it's a sign the therapy has not been fully successful yet. Now we can imagine one day, the therapy has been going on for weeks or months, right? And the doctor takes the pin and sticks it into the person's hand, and the person goes, "Ew! Why'd you do that?" Yes? At which point, a tremendous smile breaks out, not only across the doctor's face, but also across the patient's face. Yeah? Because the fact that they felt the prick, even though it hurt, even though it was unpleasant, it means that they're coming back to life. And the Ikarim connects this to Yira. And he says like this. He says that a normal person feels fear or awe when they're exposed to certain stimuli. For instance, Revolba pointed out to me, there's a verse in the Torah that says that Moshe was told by God, throw your staff onto the ground. And Moshe took his staff and threw it onto the ground, and it turned into a snake. And the verse says that Moshe jumped back. So Revolba pointed out to me, from here you see it's a mitzvah to be afraid of snakes. Yeah? He's afraid of a snake. People say, oh, Moshe Rabbeinu is not afraid of anything. No, he's afraid of a snake, because a normal person is afraid of a snake. It's a mitzvah to be normal. You are supposed to be afraid of snakes. That's normal. If you're not afraid of a snake, there's something not so right upstairs. Yes? Okay. You should be afraid to stick your hand in a fire. That's normal. You should be afraid of things that are fearful. In the same way, you should be in awe of things that are awesome. And to the extent that I'm not in awe of things that are awesome, I feel that there's something broken. If, on Yom Kippur, during the Ne'ilah service, I can't concentrate on anything but what I'm going to wear the next day, I feel bad, I'm depressed, because there's something broken. I know there's something broken. But if, on Yom Kippur, during the Ne'ilah service, I feel really to the core, if I'm breathless, if I cry, if I'm moved, if I'm paralyzed by the words of the Chazan, if they're screaming, right, Hashem, Hu Elokim, my heart is in my throat. In that moment of awe, I also feel simcha. Because it means that everything's working. It means that I'm a healthy person. So what you see is that simcha, it often is a sign that the person is healthy and everything's functioning properly. Perhaps let's take this one step further. We now see there's not necessarily a contradiction between simcha and yira. They could go hand in hand. I might be very, very happy that I'm feeling yira. Taking a step further, what that means is I'm very, very, very happy that I own a healthy, normal body, mind, and soul. The fact that I own this thing, which is healthy and normal, that makes me happy. Translated, and this is a very, very deep principle, what causes simcha is acquisitions. It's when you own something that's precious. There's a very interesting halacha. It's brought down in Shulchan Aruch. Normally I read it to people before. I'm not going to read it today, but normally I read it to people before Chag comes. There won't be time this year because I'm going to be speaking about something else today. But there's a halacha brought down in Shulchan Aruch that before the Chag, you are a chayiv, you are halachically obligated before the holiday to go and make sure that you will have a present for yourself for the Chag. Single men and women buy their own presents for themselves. Married men and women, there's a custom that the spouse buys for the person. By men, they say they like, men like wine, old wine and good meat. By women, women like, the Gemara says, clothing, jewelry, or perfume. Yeah? And children, they say toys. Yeah? When you first hear this speaking about the opposite sex, or you know, it's not, so you think, oh, they can't, like, that's ridiculous. But of course, you know the Gemara got it right when it comes to you. And it's amazing how accurate the Gemara really is. So there seems to be a halacha that you must acquire something physical before the Chag. Why is that? That's because there's a mitzvah of simcha on the Chag. And when you acquire things, that brings you simcha. Now, of course, there's different levels of acquisition. If you buy a dress and it's gorgeous, but it falls apart after the first day of the Chag. So it brings you a lot of simcha the first night, but if you knew it was going to fall apart and you wouldn't be able to wear it the second day, your simcha would be limited. If you knew that it's a high-quality dress, you'll be able to wear it straight through the Chag, and it'll probably last you halfway through the winter as well, so then it would bring a lot more simcha. And of course, if you knew that this dress, not only that, was completely waterproof, so even when your children spill, you know, red wine all over it, right, it will be completely unaffected, that'll bring even more simcha. And if you knew that this dress was magical and would change styles before each Chag, then it would be a tremendous simcha, because it's going to last forever. Okay. What you see is that the amount of simcha that you derive from the acquisition is determined by the how long that acquisition will remain in perfect quality. How long will be the in dress, so to speak. Now, because we are physical creatures, we are very, very drawn towards physical acquisitions. Spiritual acquisitions, which the truth is last much, much, much longer, a spiritual new dress never wears out. Meaning, if you acquire a beautiful midah, you acquire kindness or generosity or tznius, positive self-esteem, something like this, it lasts forever. It's the most exquisite of all acquisitions. And no matter what situation you're in, it'll never be taken away from you. So really, the highest quality acquisitions, the things that bring us the most simcha, are those things that are spiritual. Nevertheless, it's hard to see those things. And it's hard to see the opportunities to acquire those things. The stores have big sales signs, you know, like, so you can't miss, they're selling a dress. But the opportunities to acquire midos, the advertisements aren't out there. Unless you have one of the Neve teachers pointing, there it is, there's your opportunity. So then there's not necessarily an advertisement. You might miss it because we're very physical creatures and we see the physical. So very often, in order to get happiness, we concentrate on acquiring physical things. Yeah, I think my wife called this retail therapy. Yes? You go to the mall and buy and it relieves depression. So the problem here is multifold. First, there's a pasuk in there's a medrash in Kohelis Rabbah Vav Zayin, that describes what it's like when a person tries to achieve happiness by acquiring physical things. And the medrash in Kohelis Rabbah Vav Zayin 6:7 says, "Mashal l'mad davar d'omo." What can this be compared to? When a Jew tries to acquire happiness by going to the mall, this could be compared l'ironi shenasa bas malachim. It's like a city dweller, some guy who lives in the inner city, you know, in the poorer section of town, who marries a princess. If he brings her everything that is valuable in his world, he brings her clean needles so she doesn't have to get AIDS when she shoots up. That's valuable in his part of the world. Yeah, right. He brings her, you know, a black coat so that when she robs, no one will be able to see her in the night. You know, he brings her all this stuff. Einan chashuvin la, they're not valuable to her klum at all. Lama, why? She bas melech, she's a queen. And all of these sort of degraded gifts mean nothing to her. Kach nefesh, so to the soul. Ilu avat la kol madne olam, if you bring in all of the delicious, physically pleasurable things in the world, einam klum la, it means nothing to the neshama. Lama, shehi min elyoni, because she comes from a higher place. And up there, these sorts of things just aren't very meaningful. So problem number one is, although the Torah demands that you go out and buy yourself something physical for Yom Tov, the Medrash is telling you, if you depend entirely on that to bring deep levels of simcha on the Chag, it's not going to do the job. It'll bring some simcha, but it's not going to do the job. There's another problem, and that's this, that physical gifts always remain external to you. If you get a new ring, the ring sits on the outside of your finger, which means it can fall off. If you get a dress, it can be taken away from you. If you get a new house, there can be an earthquake. All this stuff is outside of you. The only thing that you get, which is yours forever, is something which is internal, which is integral to who you are. The Gaon writes on a pasuk in Mishlei. The pasuk in Mishlei, Yud Dalet Yud Gimel, reads, "Gam b'schok yichav lev." Even jokes cause pain to the heart. V'achrisa simcha, and the end, the final stage of simcha, I'll add, which is caused by physical gifts, tuga, is agony. Ultimately, whatever simcha we get from physical gifts ends up being a sort of agony. And the Gon here brings the following story. There was a king. I don't know if this is true or metaphor. The Gon doesn't say. This could be true. There was a king that was very, very wealthy and asked if one of his servants could build him a very, very beautiful table. And his servants worked and worked and built this gorgeous table, and it was made of the finest woods, right, gilded with gold and silver and the finest gemstones implanted in it. And they brought it to the king, and it was truly exquisite. And the king showed it off to all of his hachamim, and all of his hachamim looked at it and said, "This is the most spectacular gift anyone could ever own." Except for one advisor. One advisor said, "That gift will bring you nothing but agony." So the king banished that advisor. You're like, "Don't tell me that. It's a gorgeous table. I like it. You don't want someone to rain on your parade." So what happened? The king was going for a journey, and he loved this table. And wherever he went, he always took the table with him. Part of the journey involved crossing a body of water. They loaded the table onto the boat with the king. There was a terrible storm. The table ended up going overboard. They brought out the Royal Navy. The Royal Navy searched and searched and searched, but the thing was made of solid gold and silver. It went straight to the bottom of the ocean and was gone. And the king was miserable that he had lost this gorgeous table. You can imagine, yeah? Your engagement ring. Imagine your engagement ring goes overboard. It's going to cause you pain. As much simcha as you had when you got it, that's how much pain you're going to have when you lose it. So the Gon says, that's the way it is with any gift that's not internal. Any gift that's external could be taken away. And therefore, he says, you should really concentrate all your energies on acquiring the internal gifts. Whenever there's a contradiction between acquiring internal gifts and external gifts, go for the internal, because that can't be taken away from you. So we've described simcha as a sign that we're doing something right. Specifically, if we have a proper relationship to Torah, such that the Torah builds within us good midos, we will end up being very, very happy people. And the happiness is a sign that, in fact, we are learning Torah properly and building proper midos. Now let's switch from looking at simcha as a symptom to looking at simcha as a cause. There's a very psychologically deep Gemara, if I can put Gemara and psychology in the same word, in the same sentence, right? Pardon me, right? In the Gemara in Psachim, page 68b, Samaches Amad Beis. And the Gemara there says like this, that Rav Sheshis, every 30 days, would review all of the Talmud he had ever learned. And then, when he had finished his chazara of everything he had ever learned, all the Torah, he went back through all those years in Neveh, everything he had ever picked up when he was there. Then he would walk over to the door, he would take a break for a minute, walk over to the door, and he would stand by the door jamb, and he would say, "Rejoice, my soul. Rejoice, my soul. For you I learned Torah, for you I learned oral tradition." Now, why would someone like Rav Sheshis involve himself in something which is so clearly a waste of time? This is pure bittulzman. While he's standing at the door, he could have learned another five paragraphs in the Gemara. So what is he standing by the door saying, "Rejoice my soul" for? I mean, he's a complete bum. What's wrong with him? So of course, the principle here is that you cannot internalize Torah unless you're happy. You've all had this experience. You've sat in a Torah class when you were disturbed, when you were bothered, when you were depressed, when there was something on your mind, and it's as if you were covered by seven shields, and everything the Rav or the Rebbe says just bounces off, and you walk out and you learn nothing, and within a few hours you'll remember nothing from that shiur. However, if the Rav was joking throughout the shiur, and during the shiur you were really happy, or if whatever, something great happened in your life, you were high, there was simcha, then everything you learn goes right in, and it actually helps you internalize the Torah and turn the Torah into mitzvos. So it turns out that simcha is the cause of somebody doing proper avoda, that it is the cause of turning real Torah into real good mitzvos. And without the simcha, it can't happen. This is why Ezra, the prophet Ezra, when he was guiding the Babylonian community who had come back to Eretz Yisrael, in their first Rosh Hashanah, since they had come back, and they were terrified because many of the guys had married Gentile women. They were sitting in Eretz Yisrael with these Gentile wives, and they were scared to death because the Yom HaDin had come. And the depression was so great, people were standing there speechless. They couldn't talk, they were so sad. And Ezra says to them, this is in Nehemiah chapter 8, verses 10 through 13. Ezra says to them, Lechu, go! Ichlu mashmanim, eat fat things. Shesu mamtakim, drink sweet things. Vishilchu manos le'ein nachon lo, and send portions to anybody who doesn't have. Why? So the next word you expect him to say is because today's a big party. But he doesn't say that. He says, Ki kadosh hayom la'adoneinu. Today is Rosh Hashanah. There's a din. Hashem's going to look inside of you and see, who are you today? Therefore, al te'atzvu, don't be sad. God forbid, don't be sad when you need to have good midos. Why? Ki chedves Hashem hi me'uzchem. Because joy, dafk in spiritual things, chedves Hashem, joy in spiritual things, that's your power. That's what gives you good midos. And if you're not happy on Rosh Hashanah, then you'll never internalize the mitos that you need to have in order to present yourself and get a good din. And the pasuk goes on and says, V'levim, machshim, l'kol ha'am. The levim start saying, shh. All the people are crying, and they're saying, shh, don't cry. Ki hayom kadosh, v'al ti'atzvu. Today's holy, don't be sad. God forbid, don't be sad. When you're sad, you can't internalize midos. You can't grow. V'yechu kol ha'am le'achov lishtot. So the whole people went to eat and to drink. V'lishloach manos v'lasot simcha, to send portions to other people and to make a simcha gedola. Kevinu b'dvarim asher hudiyu lahem. They understood the depth of the message that Ezra transmitted to them. If you want to become a tzedekis, you must be happy. We now understand what simcha is. We now understand what causes simcha. What causes simcha is acquisitions. What is this thing we're trying to cause, though? What is simcha? How could you check yourself to see, is this it? Am I having it right now? Is that simcha? What are you feeling for? Okay, this gets a little bit deep. Rav Moshe Chaim Luzzatto, arguably the greatest Kabbalist of the 18th century, in one of his deepest works, a book called The Da'as Tvunos, writes in chapter 130 the following. Ma'asei ha-tzadikim, the actions of tzadikim, yolidu ha-simcha lo yisbarach. It gives birth to, it causes, in heavy quotes, simcha by God. V'ze mekor l'kol ha-tovos. And this simcha that God experiences is the source of all of the good things that we get in our lives. Of all the brachas that end up coming back down to us, it all comes because of him feeling simcha. And then the Ramchal flips and he says, "Umase ha-rashayim, the actions of evil people, kava yochel, as if you could say such a thing, yatsivu etalev, they make God's heart sad," quote unquote. The zemakor lekol arous, and this is the source of all evil things that we experience in our life, of every bad thing that happens to us. Whenever Jews suffer holocausts, they come because God is in a state of sadness caused by Rishayim. Now come on. What do you mean God is happy? God is sad? Those are human emotions. Or perhaps not. Perhaps simcha is not really an emotion. Perhaps it's a spiritual state. And perhaps it's a state that because we were created in the image of God, we experience. But it's a divine state. And if we could define exactly what the divine state is that God goes into, then we'd know what's happening in us when we feel simcha. And so, Rav Chaim Friedlander, in the Friedlander edition of the Das Tfunos, this is footnote 27, explains the following. He says, "Kasher ha-makabel mekalkalet ma'asav," when someone who is receiving from God corrupts his own actions, when I become a corrupt person, "Az HaKodesh Baruch Hu mitzamtzem et hashpato elav," then what Hashem does is He shuts down the flow of blessing that's headed towards me. "Umeidach," on the other hand, "Simchato shel HaKodesh Baruch Hu," the happiness of Hashem, "Hi ribui hashpa," it's when Hashem opens up the tube and the blessings just flow down, they pour like Niagara Falls. And that happens, kasher makabel machshir atzmo liot re'ui lahashpato yisbarach. That happens when an individual makes himself an appropriate receptor of Hashem's gifts. To explain, the whole purpose of this world is that God's will should get done. When I make myself into somebody who's going to do God's will, then God directs massive resources towards me. And those resources, when they're flowing into me, in order for them to flow into me, God must be in a state called, quote-unquote, simcha. That is, the state where God is giving is called simcha. If I'm not worthy of resources, then God contracts the flow. And when God is holding back the flow, when I'm in a state of taking, of holding back, that is technically called sadness. Okay, now that's by God. Whatever's true by God must be true by us. What did we just learn? This is very, very deep. That the state of simcha is defined as, the definition of simcha is, being in a state of giving. That is simcha. How do you get there? By acquiring. Why do you get there by acquiring? Because when you're acquiring, you feel full, so you release, and then it flows. But the actual experience is having your gates open, being in a state where you want it to just flow, being in a state where you want to give. The state of givingness, that is the state of simcha. You cause that through acquisition. But the state we're shooting for is a state of givingness. Sadness is when we are in a state of contraction, when selfishness, we're afraid to give. Usually caused by lack of acquisitions. Hold on, let me take questions at the very end. Unless it's a question just of clarification, a word that you didn't understand. So that's a deep question. Hold on. Okay, now, back inside. We understand now that there's not necessarily a contradiction between simcha and yira. In fact, often they will go hand in hand. We also understand what causes simcha, acquisitions. We also understand what simcha is. It's being in a state of giving. why would the Jews get hit with such a serious punishment, a Holocaust, just because they're not in a state of simcha? So you see that the answer is twofold. On the one hand, when a Jew is not in a state of simcha, that is the clearest sign that this Jew is not serving Hashem properly. It's a clear sign because when you learn Torah properly, it causes simcha. So says the Gemara. More, it's a clear sign because if I was functioning properly, if I felt yira, if I felt awe, if I was feeling all things I was supposed to, I would feel simcha just from the fact that I'm healthy. So if I'm not feeling simcha, it must mean that I'm not really healthy. Because I would have tremendous simcha just from being a healthy, great person. And more, it's also a simen that I'm not giving. Because by definition, when I'm giving, I don't just mean physically giving, I mean spiritually giving. There's many people who give lots and lots and lots of gifts and are complete takers. A supermarket who says, 2-for-1, special offer. They're giving because they want back. And they know if you, with the 2-for-1 offer, they'll get you into the supermarket, you'll buy a lot more. There's people who give lots and lots and lots of gifts so that other people will be emotionally indebted to them. That's not called giving. We're talking about being in a spiritual state of giving, which sometimes involves physical giving, sometimes involves physical taking. When I bring my wife the roses, if she's a giver, she takes them. To not take them is not to be a giver. So when a person is in a spiritual state of giving, so then, by definition, they'll be happy. By definition, that's what it feels like to be happy, is to be a giver. And therefore, possible reason number one why Holocaust could happen is because when a person's not happy, it means they are not serving Hashem. They've abandoned Torah. It's not one small detail. It's a symptom that everything's gone awry. A gadol who will go unnamed told me that if I want to know which rabbis have Yiras Hashem, I should see how much simcha they experience. And he told me, when I look for a rabbi for myself, look for a rabbi that has simcha. Now, he might not walk around with a big smile all the time. There's people who are more serious, there's people who are less serious. But there's a certain simcha. You have to read it into the person's style. Some people's styles, they never smile, but that doesn't mean they're not happy. You're looking for someone who has simcha because that's a sign something's going right. And if they don't have simcha, it's a sign something's going wrong. Deeply wrong. More, another reason that Holocaust would happen is because simcha is the necessary prerequisite to proper avodah. You can't internalize midos. You can't become a great person unless you're happy. Therefore, if the person is not in a state of happiness, there's no way they can work on their midos. And for that, Holocausts happen. Why? Like the Pasuk in Mishlei says, Hachzeik b'musar al teireif. Hold on to musar, don't lose your grip on it. Nitzreha, guard her, guard musar. Ki hi chayecha, for she's your life. Asked the Vilna Gaon, why is musar your life? The Gaon explains, ki mash adam chai hu kidei lishbor mida shelo shavar hina. The person who reasons alive is to perfect the mida they haven't perfected yet. That's why I came to the planet. So if I can't work on my midos, because I'm not besimcha, so what am I doing here? I'm wasting my time. There's no Vodas Hashem happening. By definition, I'm a Rasha. By definition, I'm not doing what I came here to do. Therefore, we've got to work up simcha. That's why it's a mitzvah. Now we're beginning to see there was never a contradiction between the two verses in the first place. The first verse says, the Jews get hit with Holocausts. Because they don't serve Hashem, they don't do the mitzvahs. That's right, they don't do the mitzvahs. If they were doing the mitzvahs properly, they'd be happy. And if they were building midos, they'd have to work up simcha to do it. So a sign that they're not doing mitzvahs, they're not working on their midos, is they're not happy. And that's what the latter verses mean at the end of the Tocha, when it says, Takas asher lo avarat es Hashem b'simcha b'tuv levav. That we get hit because we didn't serve Hashem b'simcha b'tuv levav with happiness, That undermined our whole avoda and was a sign that our avoda was not going. Why does the verse add, "May rov kol"? Because we didn't serve Hashem with happiness when we had so much gashmius, when we were so wealthy. Again, this is quite deep. If we take our resources, our time, our health, our money, and all these gifts that God gives us, we want from God just for the sake of avoda. In other words, if we turn to God to get filled up, if what we really want is perfect midos, so then mida keneged mida, since that's what we really want, God pours the hashpa, the influence, the blessings down on top of us. But if, when the blessings are being poured on top of us, if when we have time, and we have health, and we have wealth, we have peace, when we have these things, so if then we turn away from God, and we just immerse ourselves in those physical gifts, what we're showing God is that we're not terribly interested in the internal development, the internal perfection, the internal wealth. And then, in the midst of that rove kol, Hashem says, "You don't want it? I won't give it to you." And Hashem cuts off the flow. I want to conclude, the last 2 minutes, with something very concrete and practical. The index, during the entire year for Simcha is Sukkos. This is the time when we're supposed to be feeling Simcha. And the Mefarshim explain exactly why, because at Sukkos time, sitting in your shack, your temporary little house, you're supposed to look at all the crops you brought in during the harvest season. This is the end of the harvest season, you bring in all your crops, and you look at all your crops. And because of all the acquisitions, you're supposed to be feeling Simcha. And Hashem commands you, look and feel Simcha. And there's even a custom, many people hang fruit in their Sukkot, And the reason they hang it there is, again, is a reminder, look at the gifts, look what I acquired this year. Now, of course, you realize if all you hang in your Sukkah are apples and bananas, then you miss the point. In yeshiva, we have an expression. We say to people, you should have a sukkos. You really need a sukkos. What we mean by a sukkos is a time to just sit back and look at what you accomplished this last year. That's the definition of a sukkos. Not your physical crops. Okay, your physical crops too. You should go and buy yourself a dress. You should appreciate whatever physical gifts you got this year. But far beyond that, ask yourself now, who was I a year ago tonight? The night of Sukkot. You're sitting there, the night of Sukkot, under the Sukkah. Who was I a year ago tonight? What was my character like? What were my brachas like? Did I dream that I would be sitting in Yerushalayim at this time, who I am, under a sukkah, being this person that I am now? What's changed? And you can go back a couple of years, or 5 years, or 10 years. Look at what you become. This is not a time for worrying about the crops that failed. That you don't think about while you're underneath the sukkah. When you're underneath the sukkah, just think about what you did acquire. I know people who take this to an extreme. I'm not recommending this to you, but I'm just going to point out so you can understand the concept. I know people who, in the 5 days, 4 days, leading from Yom Kippur to Sukkot, they sit down and make lists of everything they accomplished during the year. And those lists, these people are extremists, they actually take those lists into the sukkah with them. And that night, eating the first meal under the sukkah, they sit there and they look at their list of what they became that year. A physical written list of everything they became. Yeah, you make kiddush, eat some hamotzi, put a little honey on there, then sit there drinking your wine or grape juice, eating your hamotzi, and look at your list. Okay, now, these people are extremists. You don't have to go this far, but at least to give some contemplation to the harvest that we made this year, to the acquisitions that we acquired. And if we're successful in this little avoda of sukkahs, of having our sukkahs, of feeling the gifts that we receive, that simcha will be the cause of an avoda during the year that is absolutely unparalleled. By the time the next sukkahs comes around, Hashem should bless us, because of the simcha we're going to feel this year, Hashem should bless us, that by next sukkahs, yeah, that all the blessings that he gave us sprouted, right? And we've got forests and forests and forests more blessings than we even had this year. Chag Sameach.